Welcome, everyone. This is Molly Kellogg, and today is September 12th, and this is the semi-regular roundtable call on nutrition counseling, where we get a chance to just join in together and be all in one place in an informal kind of way to talk about this process of counseling our clients toward better health. And I'll remind you, for those of you who have or have not been on these calls before, this is not a call where there's like a webinar where there's content planned or anything like that. You don't get any CEUs. It's more for us to just share resources, share exciting things that may be going well for you. Some of you may have been following my tips or going to my workshops and trying something out, and it worked real well for you, and this would be a great place to share it, and also to bring up some challenges. I'm not sure how many we'll be able to cover, but we could probably handle some of them, and it looks to me like we have about 16 or 17 people on the call at this point, and I'm going to just go ahead and start first with a few excitements that I have that I'd like to share with all of you guys. And I do hear somebody with some noise in their background. I'm not sure who it is. It's quieter now. But remember, you can star 4 to mute yourself if you want. I think my most exciting news right now is that volume 4 of my practice workbook is complete. Just finished doing the index last week, and we're working on getting it to the printer. And sometime next week, I hope to send out an announcement for a pre-publication deal where we'll waive the shipping if you purchase your copy before the end of the month, and we should be shipping them out certainly by the end of October. So I'm very excited about this. And this particular practice workbook is really more chock full than some of the other ones have been because I chose to take the next 25 tips, for 51 through, but I ended up going more than that. I think I went to 87 or something, and folded some of the other tips that are in my archives in there, along with some more case studies, as I usually do. So this one will be particularly chock full, and I'll be curious to get people's feedback when it comes out. Some of you may be heading to Atlanta in October for the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics annual meeting, and I hope I'll see some of you there. I will, as usual, on that Sunday have a booth at the member marketplace, and I'd love to have some of you stop by and say hello. I'll be there, I think it's at least 9 to 3, something like that. Though, look at the program, it may be a little different than that. The weekend before that, I will also be in Atlanta for the Motivational Interviewing Network of Trainers Forum, and I'm really looking forward to that. I'm going to be presenting on MI and the Health at Every Size approach, and I'm delighted to bring that to my MI trainee colleagues, and I'll also be picking up a whole bunch of cool new exercises and things to help move along counseling skills. A few other things. I am going more into doing some more advanced trainings. For those of you who have already been to my two-day counseling intensive, I'll be giving a one-day advanced training in Atlanta before Fancy starts. That's October 17th, and in Seattle in March 1st. And I hope to fit in maybe one more next year somewhere. So, and I just got back from the National WIC Association meeting, the meeting of people who work for the WIC program, and that was very exciting because WIC is celebrating 40 years, and they had a very moving documentary on the beginnings of the WIC program and how much wonderful good it's been doing for moms and families. So, anyway, let's jump in. I'd like to hear from anybody who would like to chime in. Particularly if you have a something to celebrate, something that's going well, or something you'd like to share with us. Who would like to jump in and say your name and where you're from?
Molly, my name is Kate Speck, and I'm a fellow mentee, and I'll be seeing you in Atlanta. And
oh,
this is
awesome.
It's the first time I've called, but I've been doing some work with WIC in Nebraska.
Offering robotic cardiac surgery.
Oh, dear.
For more information,
somebody has
contact
put us on
the Center
hold.
For Advanced Cardiac Surgery at 617-789-2045.
Oh, dear. I think I
Saint Elizabeth
that
is proud to open our.
Okay.
Are you back from? Somebody just put us on hold for a bit, and we had hold music.
Yeah, but
please
I'm back.
Don't do that. Okay, good. Don't do that again. Use *4 instead if you want to put yourself on hold. Okay. So Kate was talking about you've been doing some work with WIC in Nebraska.
Right, and I've done a couple of workshops with WIC organizations, and I also have your couple of your books, and I was just fascinated by the fact that all the work that you've done, and it's really helping me in my work, so I thought I'd listen in and see if I could get more pointers from everybody.
Oh, good. Great.
Thank you very much.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm always so delighted to hear from other mentees, and also that's what we call members of the Motivational Interviewing Network of Trainers, and particularly people who are working for WIC, because some of you may know that WIC really has taken on the client-centered approach, as they often call it, or client-centered counseling, and boy, does that fit with MI.
Well, I think it's interesting in the work that I've seen with the client-centered approach, it is MI, but they don't call it that.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of them like to sort of switch the wording around a little bit, but our MI certainly informs it. And as a matter of fact, I'll just add one exciting thing. I had Kate when at the WIC Association meeting, I did a workshop on supervisors working with doing observations of sessions, because they are beginning to do more of that, either state staff or agency staff, observing sessions and giving feedback.
Yes.
And so I was delighted to be trying to, you know, help them do that in the most MI consistent manner.
Yeah, I love it. It's great. Thank you.
Sure. Well, I'll look forward to seeing you in Atlanta.
I'll be at your workshop.
Oh, good. Great. Good. Who else wants to jump in? I don't want to start calling on you.
Home-based primary care, this is Deborah.
Deborah, you seem to be on
the
conference call.
That was an accident.
Okay. Deborah, would you like to contribute anything to this call? Do you have any concerns or questions? Oh, okay. I guess she's not there anymore.
Molly, I'm Baldwin Sanders. I'm calling from Western Carolina University, and I've actually been out of practice for a long time, and I'm going to end up teaching a counseling course. And so I've been through your first two books. They're fabulous, and I can't find the third one. Somebody loaned it to me at any rate, but I hope to get that.
The third one isn't out yet.
Oh, so that's – I thought you said a fourth.
No. The third
okay.
one isn't out yet. Right. You haven't missed anything.
And I'm wondering why you – I wish you would write a book on counseling for nutrition and dietetic students.
Mm-hmm. Like a textbook.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, people have often said that to me, and that's a pretty long question. I know a lot of professors have been actually using Volume 1 in their courses. It isn't a textbook, though. You're right. It doesn't have everything in it. It doesn't have social learning theory. It doesn't have all of that stuff that you, of course, need to include in a counseling course. And part of the reason is because I feel that's not what I'm good at.
Yeah.
The much more practical aspects of it.
Well, so really, actually, that's what they need.
Yeah.
The practical. They forget what about the
names
theories.
Of the theories are and
yeah.
all that
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. And I guess I agree. I absolutely agree with you, and that's why I don't bother with all that, though it sounds like I'm downplaying all the research that's been done on various theories and things like that, and I'm not trying to do that. I'm just saying I want to put my energies toward more practical things.
Well, and it is practice that they need, and I'm afraid as a counseling course, we don't get much practice, enough practice in.
Absolutely. Yeah, is this an undergraduate or graduate course?
It's undergraduate, and we have an internship program, and so because of that, the interns are taking all the places where the counselors around here are already booked up with people.
Right.
So it's hard
to
get them to observe.
Yeah, yeah.
And they know each other, so practicing with each other is a little bit...
Is awkward and difficult. Absolutely, yeah. One of the, by
but
the
your
way,
books are very helpful.
Oh, good. Are you on in the NDEP group, the practice group for the Academy? It might be useful for you to join that group. Actually, I think they changed their name, but it's the practice group that's professors, internship directors, people like that, because they often have posts that have to do with, you know, what ideas people have for teaching.
Right, I'll do that. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if anybody else wants to chime in on this issue of teaching, it is tricky, particularly because undergraduates are quite young, and you know they don't realize what they don't know, and they think it's just about learning the content. And even when they practice with each other, or even with if you can manage to get them a volunteer client somehow. They're such beginners.
And I do that. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, good. You do get them a chance to a volunteer. You know, either some people, I know in some colleges, they have a free service for staff people in the university, and the free service of counseling by the nutrition students. that's one way to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, good. Does anybody else want to chime in on the topic of teaching? Counseling.
I might try my hand. My name's Ben. I'm a
Hi.
Nutrition Education Coordinator at the University of
uh-huh.
Georgia.
Uh-huh. Sure.
And so we've got a group of peer educators who in the past have been doing tabling and residence hall presentations, things like that.
Uh-huh.
And we got a lot of interest from them in the past few years, and so we were trying to figure out other things for them to get into. And this year what we're starting is something we're calling advisement because we didn't want to call it counseling.
right.
And hopefully what it'll look like, we're starting it, and we'll have our first sessions in 2 weeks or so. And the students take a class over the summer with myself and then one of the other registered dietitians on campus where we go over a lot of counseling principles, including motivational interviewing, and we use your videos, which are fantastic. And then what we're going to do is have them just do some one-on-one sessions with students on just kind of health and wellness goals, and we're going to be in the room. We're not going to be in the conversation, but we're going to be in the room. We're going to have a few of these conversations going on at the same time, so if things come up, we'll be there. But if not, they can get some good experience, and then we'll just have an email follow-up with the students afterwards and we'll collecting any information or anything like that. But, you know,
that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, we're hoping.
Yeah. So it's new. You're just going to be doing this now.
Yeah, our first sessions are starting in less than 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Oh,
very interesting.
You.
Good. Thank
very
you.
Interesting, yeah. And so that's using both the sort of a peer educator system that you have going there already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and expanding it into a little more one-on-one so that they have now, would all of these students that will be doing the advisement, are they nutrition students?
Yeah, they're all either fourth or fifth year, either consumer foods or dietetics, which are pretty similar majors.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, how exciting. Oh,
yeah.
Best of luck to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you'll have a chance to give them a little bit of feedback, it sounds like.
Certainly, yeah. We're going to have them.
Hello?
Have them. Fill out in their sessions. They're going to go over goals with students and things like that. We've already had them do an assignment where they're picking a non-nutrition major to do it just over the summer to get some practice, as well as doing it on them kind of with each other, which can be kind of awkward, as we've talked about. But then, we'll be in the room kind of debriefing with them right afterwards as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Ben, might I share with you a thought I have as you're,
sure.
as you're saying this? I can tell you're really into the whole counseling process. And so I'm assuming you already will be doing this, but I'll suggest it anyway and see how it sounds, that the more you use a motivational interviewing process when you're debriefing the students, the more you will be modeling for them how to be doing it.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, and
yeah,
I'm presuming that's something you're already yeah.
Well, I think it's I think oftentimes that's how I'm teaching, but being mm-hmm. really intentional about it afterwards and making sure
yeah.
it's out there is really important. Sure.
Right. Uh-huh. And even if here and there, if possible, possibly, you know, saying, "Oh, I just did an open-ended question. Did you notice that?" Or, you know, something like
yeah,
that.
Sure.
You know. as a matter of fact, Ben, I happen to have a one-page sheet that you might find useful on providing feedback to trainees in an MI manner. Feel free to email me, and I'll send that to you.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
You can see if it's useful or not. Yeah, like
yeah.
that. Right. Uh-huh. Cool. Anybody else want to jump in on teaching?
Can I start another topic?
Sure.
Okay, this is the first conference call I've done. My name's Jeanette.
Uh-huh.
And I am in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a dietitian for a pretty large dialysis facility.
Mm-hmm.
So we do ongoing teaching all the time
yeah.
and ongoing counseling. And I wanted to ask a specific question. One of our tools that we use is called the Nutrition Report Card. And that has a very pejorative, you know, sound to it.
Yeah.
And so I really would like to get your advice on how to present something like the Nutrition Report Card without seeming like, you know, the big, bad, mean teacher who's, and I feel like it's a great tool because we need to communicate with these patients, you know, what their lab values are and what they should be, and, but I always feel like it's a very, I want to do it in a positive way, so
mm-hmm.
any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I really hear you on that, and it sounds like you are sensitive to the fact that the patients take it negatively. And frankly, Jeanette, I suspect that even if you change the wording of it and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and do the best.
Just the, I mean, I'm wondering if I should even call it a report card because that has such a, I think it has bad associative, you know, memories for these folks.
Right. Is that that you have control over? Might you?
I think I could probably. I'm maybe not. Maybe not. I don't know. I think we could, but we'd have to. We'd probably have to work with our IT people, you know, to change the name
yeah,
of it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Are you looking for a suggested other wording?
I'm looking for a way to approach it that would not be a negative way, but that would be more, you know, like I want to come alongside them and help them. I don't want to just to give them their marks.
Yeah, you have such good instincts, Jeanette. You know what'll work best.
Well, I'm also a homeschool mom, so I feel like education is sort of my, you know, bread and butter. every I mean, here at work as well as at home. So I'm constantly trying to improve.
yeah. And I hear you. I really want to reinforce for you that you have good instincts, and I don't think there's any question that even if you did absolutely everything you could to be as coming alongside them as possible, et cetera, there would still be a part of each of the patients who is beating themselves up, you
mm-hmm.
know, and saying they're not doing well. So that's there already, unfortunately.
And I think it creates a defensiveness. It creates a defensive position on the part of the patient, you know, just almost cringing as they see me approach.
Let me toss out a few things that I think of. And
okay.
In Kate, my fellow mentee, may pop in here too. Way back at the beginning of the development of MI, it really was started with something called the Drinker's Checkup.
Okay.
Which is, it was originally for alcoholics.
Yes.
And often people who didn't even admit they had alcoholism, and, you know, I mean, there was a lot of resistance. And they did a lot with lab values and the results of the person filling out a questionnaire about how much they drank and how often, and then they'd compare it statistically with the people their age who, how much they drank. And, you know, they had a lot of figures, facts and
right, things. Right, right.
And so they called it a checkup. So if you're looking for different wording, that might... Now, and all
yeah, I do like that better.
Yeah, the way it was presented to the people was the information was all gathered in a very neutral, straightforward kind of way.
Right.
And then after a bit of, hey, hi, how you doing, how's the weather, you know.
Right, and I try to do that too.
Type of stuff, yeah. Then, you know, how you feeling today and whatever. Then moving into...
Well, I've got your checkup.
Yeah, we the lab values here. Is this the time to go over? You know, asking permission.
That's
might
good. I like that.
Together, might we take a look at them together to see what might be useful for you? You know.
Okay. 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 I like that.
And then when you actually go over the facts and figures, have it do it in the most neutral way you can. Here's the phosphorus level. This is the normals.
Right. Right.
No.
Yeah, I've received advice in the past where, you know, don't tell them immediately, you know, what's off on their labs, but instead just hand them the report card and say, is there anything you see? Is there anything that jumps out at you? And that way, you know, they're looking at it. They're seeing the ranges where it should be. They're seeing where theirs are, and you're not saying it. They're saying it.
Exactly, exactly.
I've tried that. That takes a lot of time. It takes a little bit more time than the other, you know, more direct approach. But I do think it's useful, especially with certain patients. Now, some patients, they're like little kids, so happy to get their report card because they're pretty sure it's a good one.
Right.
And so you don't have to be quite as diplomatic with them.
Right. And you work with these people ongoing, so you get to know.
Yes. Yes, I do know them, which is a great advantage.
You know, the ones you can just say, oh, your lab results are here. Why don't you take a look?
Right, exactly, exactly.
The others where you have to do more groundwork.
Yes, yes.
Or
yes.
I'm not judging you here. This is all meant to be useful information for all of us, including
Yeah, this is Kate, and I really love that approach, and I was just kind of thinking of different words. You know, you were thinking about what should we call it, actually, and I love the idea of here's your – here are your results. Would you like to take a look at them, see what you make of them, that kind of approach. But if you're looking for like a title, I'm thinking maybe the terms of collaboration or collaborative feedback or teamwork or somehow or other kind of presenting it as that this is you and I working together on your piece so that we are pointers, maybe even pointers.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that word feedback because – feedback technically is just neutral. It's just fact.
Right. It's very neutral.
I wonder if there are people who would find that one working well.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, the feedback basically is just it's just a report. It's just what your lab work is saying, and what do you make of this kind of, you know, the approach of what do you make of this, and, you know, I wonder why it might be in this situation. I mean, why you might be in this condition at this point or something like that. I guess I wouldn't say condition.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I wonder why your lab
what do you make of these numbers? Or
what do you make of the results of this right now?
Yeah, and what might you need from me? Or
right.
Well,
yeah, I like all of that. I mean, the report card includes suggestions. You know, which is triggered by, you know, certain values. Those to me get a little old, and I don't even think they're even very effective anymore, especially with folks who see them, you know, month after month, the same suggestions. And that's something we can change. We just haven't been very proactive in making that a little more interesting, but it's something we can do as well.
Yeah.
I also just wonder a little bit if that, and I don't know if this is how this works with your folks, but if there's a way that you could compare it with previous ones that have not been so good.
Yes, so yes, we have a 3-month results on their report card, so they do see trends,
Oh, great.
And,
so you can say, oh, there seems to be something that happened differently this month.
Yeah. Right, yeah, you can say, you know, you did really well last month, but, you know,
And even if you can keep the talking about the feedback in the most neutral way as opposed to saying you did well last month.
Yeah, you're right. You should,
number
I
was
need to
lower
comment,
last
yeah.
month.
Right. So yeah, good point. Yeah,
curious.
Keep behavioral words out, kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. and judgment words out of it and simply say, I'm noticing this. What do you think of that? Does it make sense to you? Might there have been something different in your life? You know, get them, because then the idea, of course, is them to say, oh, yeah, you know, that was when I was eating out more or, you know, whatever.
Right. Well, I'll let someone else ask a question,
okay.
too. I didn't want to totally monopolize it, but that was very, very helpful. Thank you very much.
Good. Great. Well, thank you for chiming in, Jeanette.
If no one else has a question, I do have more, but I'll wait.
Okay. Who else? I think we've got about 25 people on the call.
Okay.
Who wants to jump in?
My name is Megan. I'm a registered dietitian. I'm working with people with eating disorders.
Uh-huh.
And I'm fairly new to the field, and I feel like my instincts, I've sort of plateaued with what I know in motivational interviewing and what I've learned from my colleagues and the other dietitian that I work with. So I'm sort of asking for some good resources that I could tap into. I have, and the name is escaping me right now, but I have one of the really common nutrition therapy books for people with eating disorders, and that's been somewhat helpful, but I feel like I need a little bit more of the counseling side of things as opposed to the MNT. So
right.
It sounds like, Molly, your stuff is what I need, but maybe just some specific go-tos for right now, you know, a couple
yeah.
of suggestions.
So what I'm hearing is you're feeling okay about the resources in terms of the MNT, the what I call the content part of eating disorders. You have, I guess, Jessica Stetnik's book or the Reef and Reef book or Aaron's book. I mean, you have enough of that kind of stuff. And you used an interesting term. You said you feel like sort of a plateau with your skills.
Yeah, it feels like I'm doing a good job, but not. Maybe I feel like I lost a little bit of my creativity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's no question that eating disorders are tough. And
yeah.
Certainly, it's tough to keep advancing. And well, first, tell me, how do you know about how you learn best? Do you do well with books, webinars, or podcasts? In person, what works best for you? Learn things.
I mean, I would say I get a good amount from all of those things. You know, I'm stuff that I can access quickly and look up. You know, when I don't know, I feel like at this point anything would be great.
Okay.
And I mean, I learn well from textbooks, but probably better from person to person kind of stuff. But
right.
I think anything is really good.
Yeah. And you said you have my books?
I don't have. I my internship director, and this was almost 5 years ago, we did a lot of work with your videos. So I have that experience, but I don't have any of your books, actually.
You might find them useful because it sounds like you'd be interested in sort of dipping in. You know, you think, oh, gosh, I have a question. How do I handle this situation?
Mm-hmm.
And my books are fairly good for that because there's an index in the back. And you can also go on my website. There are a bunch of tips that have been archived there. And you can search around, and if there's a specific counseling struggle or situation that you're wondering about and you wonder if I've written a tip on it, feel free to email me, and I'll see if I can find a tip that I've already written about it. Or it'll give me an idea for another one. The other book that, even though it's not about eating disorders per se, is Motivational Interviewing in Healthcare.
Okay.
Which is by Miller and Rolnick. And I think there's another author in there, isn't there? Butler, yeah. Rolnick, Miller, and Butler. And that one is a very accessible
book on MI with loads of examples and wording and things that are really straightforward. And it's about healthcare generally. However, I find it really useful also for eating disorders because there's so much resistance in eating disorders.
Well, and there's that other, that mental disorder component to it, which is where I feel I run up against a lot, and I don't, in my schooling, I just haven't had any counseling classes, so it's really been on the ground, on the job training, learning about this and soaking up every single word our group of therapists say whenever we have
to meet. And learning from the therapist, is that a good idea? Absolutely. Because especially from the point of view of learning about the psychological aspects of that particular case, but the conditions generally, keep asking questions. You say to the therapist, client keeps saying X, Y, or Z, keeps doing this, and I don't get it. I don't understand, where that's coming from. Get the therapist to explain it to you, and that's how you can learn.
Yeah.
And where do you live, Megan?
In Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Okay. I'm not coming down that way anytime soon. I was in the last year. But it would be great if you could make it to one of my two-day counseling intensives. You can take a look at my my website, see where I'm coming.
Yeah, where's the closest? Nobody ever comes to New Mexico.
Maybe there's a yet. Well, yeah, I'd love to come to Albuquerque someday. But maybe there's a place you have relatives or someone you want to visit. I'll be in St. Louis in November, Durham, December in January of next year in Atlanta. February, I'll be in Seattle, and then Chicago, Boston, Indianapolis, and Denver next year. And maybe the Bay Area and maybe Baltimore. I'm just not sure yet. But anyway.
Okay.
Okay. Well, keep at it.
Thanks. Thank you. I'll check out those books.
Sure, sure. Okay, great. Some people have some noise in their background, some beeping. Try to maybe star four yourself if you know your noise. Who else would like to chime in?
My name is Susan, and I am really – hi there. I'm new to your call, but this is a wonderful call. Thank you for providing this service. I am brand new into working with health coaching, and I have worked as a clinical dietitian for many years, but the whole concept of health coaching is relatively new to me. And I'm currently working with a couple of clients that they have pretty severe obesity, which is how I got referred to them. But when we are doing the health coaching, they bring up other concerns, family-based concerns that are pretty intimate concerns for them, and they want to spend time just talking a little bit about that and how that affects their eating, which it's kind of like the elephant in the room. You know it needs to get discussed, but I have to be really honest with you. When I'm talking with them, I am literally just like dancing in my chair.
Gosh, because somebody has an awful lot of noise in the background. Susan, can you tell me the last four digits of your phone number? I want to find your phone.
The last four digits of my phone
yeah.
are
yeah.
2973.
And keep talking.
Or I might come up as 0000.
Oh, okay. I see you because I see that one. Okay.
Yeah.
So if I see sound coming from another one, I may have to mute that person. But now the sound has stopped. So somebody sounds like they're having lunch. Okay. About staying on topic. While also being respectful and acknowledging what seems to be important that interferes in the person's life, basically.
Well put, yes.
Yeah. Well, there are a couple people I'm going to mute, by the way, because I saw some noise coming from their phone. Phones that end in 8153 and 8017. You're muted at this point. If you needed to talk to star four. Anyway, Susan, this sounds familiar. I don't think you're the only one. Let me think about that for a minute. What do you feel would be most helpful right now about this?
What my experience has been with these ladies is that giving them opportunity to voice some of those concerns and just doing some simple empathy reflections around, this is really difficult, this has made it hard for you to stick with your plan this week, just kind of naming what's been happening, or this has really made you sad this week. And then some of them, usually what ends up happening at the end of a few empathetic reflections there is they bring themselves back to topic and say, you know, I know that we're not here to talk about my son, or we're not here to talk about my husband, but thanks for listening, and then we get back. But I just want to make sure that's still within our scope of practice and how to juggle that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Susan, you just said very eloquently, indeed, what it makes sense to do. It makes sense to be a human being and to acknowledge what you're hearing and acknowledge that it's a big deal and that you know it would be hard. And that's okay. The reflections and the empathy. Simply ignoring what they say is not going to get you anywhere. And what I'm hearing you say, Susan, is a lot of the time they hear you, they get it that you heard them, and then they can move on. And and that, of course, is ideal when they make that transition. And I'm hearing you say you're squirming in your chair. You're squirming because, you know, you're feeling like, am I getting us off track? It sounds like, at least with a lot of clients, what you're doing, instead of getting off track, you're sitting with them intensely enough and really listening enough that then they can move on. You may, I'm presuming you're working with these people ongoing.
Yes.
You may begin to get to know some of them aren't as able to do that and will go down the rabbit hole with you, you know, and keep talking. And that's when you bring in the things like, gosh, this stuff sounds really important to you. I wish this was the kind of thing I could help you with. This isn't my training. This isn't what I can help you with.
Okay.
Can we find someone else? You know, that kind of thing. Some people don't even need you to do that.
Got it.
When you say that. I don't think you're going outside your role if you're giving advice to them about how to handle their son. That's another story, right?
Yeah, no. So it's just sitting there and listening to those pieces that, you know, as dietitians we all know affect people's eating. It's hard just to have, you know, that just to sit and listen to that is, for me anyway, I'm relatively new at this, and so it's more difficult. And maybe I'll develop some tolerance over time.
And the difficulty is because the topic's uncomfortable, or you just know that it's not nutrition?
Yeah, I mean they're pretty intense things with sons with mental health issues and how that affects their day-to-day living and throws off their meal plan. And, you know, I mean, it's just, it's real stuff.
And that is hard to hear.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It is. It's difficult topics. That's that's why I just wanted to make sure I wasn't going beyond my scope of practice by just even listening. You know, I feel like you need to listen.
Yeah. Just so, if they seem to keep going and seem to get the message that you're fine with them talking about that on and that you're fine to help them with it, that's when you correct them.
Gotcha.
Okay.
So that makes
thanks
good
for
sense.
Bringing
Thank
that
you.
Up. That's a common concern. Who else would like to chime in?
Molly, this is Suzanne. I'm from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
Great.
And
welcome.
I'm glad that I called today. I just wanted to run it by a situation I had yesterday with a member. I do health coaching on the telephone, and this was a weight management person, and I think I handled it okay, but I just wanted to run it by you.
We can see whatever other people say, too.
Yes. I have, you know, these are people I call every 2 to 3 months, you know, to see how they're doing with their goals that we set together. And I spoke to this person yesterday, and she was supposed to start keeping a food record, a food journal. And So I said, you know, how are you doing with your food journal? You know, and, oh, she said, I'm not doing it. I said, I said, well, what are the struggle spots, you know, from keeping you from doing that?
Mm-hmm.
And then she answered with, I don't know. And I said, well, you know, do you have anything in particular that you think would, you know, enhance you keeping a journal? And then she said, I don't know. And then everything I asked her, it was, I don't know. Oh, you know, I would like to, but, you know, I said, well, what's holding you back from starting it? You know, I don't know, you know. So it's like I get stuck with, and then we talked, then we kind of went to motivation. You know, you know, what, you know, are you motivated to lose weight right now? Is it something that, what is your number? You know, I did the scale.
The scaling.
Right, you know, so she said about a 3. Okay, so how motivated are you to lose weight? That was about a 7. And then I said, well, what, you know, what's your number for doing the things that you need to do to lose weight? And that was a 3, you know, which was,
right,
you know, going back to,
not too
so
surprising.
Then I, right. And then I said, well, you know, what would make that a 6? You know, what would have to, you know, well, I don't know. You know, so
yeah,
it just kept going that way.
Got a lot of I don't knows. Yeah.
Then I flipped into, you know, well, what are your personal reasons, you know, why you want to lose this weight?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was waiting for the I don't know, and she did say, I don't know, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, is it, you know, a health reason? And I just explored what others, you know. And
what others
so,
have said, yeah.
So what I ended up doing with her just until the next call is, you know, having her reflect and take a little note card and, you know, reflect on, you know, her personal reasons for why she wants to lose this weight. And that was the only thing we agreed upon for our next call. But I don't know if you can shed some, you know, either your tips from some of your, you know, workbooks, which I do have all of them. I just don't know where to go with this, or did I handle it properly, you know?
Yeah, yeah, well, tough situation, Suzanne. You have my empathy about that. This is a tough situation. And I know it's tougher on the phone in a sense because you can't see as much. There isn't as much body language. And also because it's on the phone, I presume you make the phone call?
I make the outreach call. We schedule an appointment, a phone appointment, so she'll know when I'm calling.
And then you
call.
Yeah. And it's a little different than if they show up.
Right.
They got in the car and came. You know? So you have a little less sense that they're engaged and ready.
And these are attached to incentive programs, you know, with employer incentives. So, yeah, they have to make so many calls and things like that, yes.
Right. So there's a little bit of, are they doing the call just to sort of do the call so they get the
incentive?
Yes. Or that, yes, right. And frankly, I've worked with a lot of people who do this phone counseling, and sometimes that's the case. It's a little akin to the WIC program where, you know, they're just there for the WIC checks,
right,
you know?
Right.
And so anytime you can actually acknowledge that, I mean, if you suspect that's what's going on, go ahead and acknowledge it. You know, I hear it may, you know, maybe just more important for you to just get the points, you know, or whatever it is. You know, just acknowledge it with a little humor, hopefully. One of my tips that might be helpful, I don't know if I can find it this fast, we'll see. It's about working with outcomes because it sounds like you and she both are focused in on losing weight as the goal. And the trouble is that's not a behavioral goal. That's an outcome.
Right.
It's not a behavioral goal. So I'm not totally sure how useful it is to do scaling on weight loss. Instead doing scaling on how important is it for you to...
Yeah, this is actually, she was...
Better.
I do coaching, but this is a weight management program that she enrolled
in.
And she enrolled in it willingly,
rather
than just the general, the health coaching, the lifestyle.
Oh, okay. So she wants to weigh less, but focusing in on the weight itself doesn't work very well. So that's when you start, if you've already figured out with her some of the behaviors that would probably get her towards some health benefits. And maybe some weight loss, or feeling better about herself or something. Fruits and vegetables, is it more fiber? Is it getting outside and walking more? Is it, you know, is it just keeping food records so you can know what the heck's going on, you know? figuring out how to focus in on specific behaviors a little more. Often I find you get the don't knows when the questions feel too vague to the person. The scaling questions. So, for example, how important is it to you right now to find out more about your eating and, you know, and where you might tweak some things, which is hopefully what the records are for, right?
Right.
So how important is it for you to get that information? Or
okay.
Just making something up, which is more... probably going to be more helpful than how important is it to you to lose weight.
Right, okay.
Anyway, and then, of course, scaling importance and confidence separately tends to work best. When you, how important is it for you to keep food records to learn what's going on now, you know,
okay.
10 to 10, and then if it's at least a 7, then what is your confidence that you will actually do that at least a few days a week, or I don't know, make up some
right.
limited
right.
amount.
That's a 3, you know, that she's not willing to do that right now. It's a 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. If she's not willing to do it, it sounds like she doesn't think it's important.
Right.
Won't do her any good. Then you can say, I hear you. Why would you do something that you don't think is going to do any good? You know,
right.
roll
right.
along with that.
She's just
you know?
Not ready to do those the things that we agreed upon at our last call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with her particularly, you could practice, well, with many people, you can practice if you think you've come up with goals at the end. Ask her to scale how confident she is that they will, that how likely
okay.
it is that she will
yeah.
do that.
Yeah,
it could
do, okay.
be that she sort of forced herself, shoehorned herself into those goals.
Mm. Okay.
And that's not going to do any good.
Thank you.
This stuff's a challenge, Suzanne. I'm glad you called in. Okay. Does anybody else have any other ideas for Suzanne? I know a bunch of you on this call are people who do phone calls a lot.
I have an aside that is connected. This is Suzanne also. I'm in California.
Uh-huh.
Hello. This is my first call, and thank you so much. I'm grateful for this. My question is on contracts, and do you have templates for those within some of your materials? And if you can speak to contracts and
what kind
if they're
of
always appropriate.
Are you referring to? Goal contracts?
No, a contract that is created at the onset of working with a client, whether it be distance, you know, they pay for a package program. And, I mean, I have, you know, with the economy now, I have people doing surprising things when they just decide that, you know, they're going to stop with the program and they're just not going to pay for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if you have those templates available for purchase, or if you can speak to how you use contracts in your practice or your recommendations.
Well, that's interesting because I don't use contracts at all.
I haven't yet.
Yeah, well, how about we hear from anyone else? Is anybody else? And I think I'm hearing, Suzanne, that your concern is that you start working with someone and then they back out, and you feel that it would have been a good idea to contract for a certain number of sessions. Is that what I'm...
Well, yeah, I mean, I have packages, and, you know, this doesn't happen all the time, but when it does, you know, it's just disturbing. And... you know, I work with some very ill clients, and sometimes maybe even I'm thinking because of their illness, mentally imbalanced, because of some of the treatments that they're getting, for example. And, you know, sometimes they're resistant to doing things for whatever reason, disordered eating or,
mm-hmm.
You know, so many different variables. And sometimes just not steeped in reality and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes clients just wig out and mm-hmm. want to blame others, and I'm just finding that, you know, a couple bad apples seem to be ruining it for everyone else, and so I'm at the point now where I'm
sort of soured that, you a little bit.
Exactly,
yeah.
That I may need, you know, and I have colleagues that use contracts, and the contract is signed at the outset, and I speak to all types of colleagues, and a lot of colleagues have problems with this, especially now in this economy, whereby, you know, people just decide they're not going to pay, and they don't, and then you have to go after them or whatever. And so I'm wondering,
right.
I find it interesting that you have not, as of yet, used contracts and don't feel the need. And that's the way I've always practiced. I've been in practice over 25 years, and I'm wondering if anyone else is noticing this, and if they this shift, and if they mm-hmm. use contracts or intend to.
Right. Suzanne, let's open that up. Is anyone on the call do that, offer packages and contracts and things like that? And want to provide any input to Suzanne? No? Okay. I'll say a few things, Suzanne. I'll just throw them out and see random thoughts, see if they're helpful. One is that the issue of using packages and things like that, indeed, people do like the idea of, you know, if they know they're going to come for a whole bunch of times, getting a little bit of a discount, you know, and that's great. Mm-hmm. The question is also, from your business point of view, how to protect yourself, and does that mean you're going to collect it all up front? You know, you decide whether, in order to give the discount, that's what you're going to do. And people have a choice. They have be sure to give them choices. This is the way I do it when people want to pay, you know, for one visit at a time, and this is the rate. And if people pay for three at the first visit, this is the rate. And just keeping it fairly straightforward and putting the choice on them, while also not getting yourself in a position where you, you know, have committed to something where, you know, they're going to, sorry for my language, but screw you. You know, that you're expecting to get payment later and you don't get it. You know, that's not going to work.
Exactly, and I resonate with what you're saying. You know, I mean, what's happening, I'm seeing more and more, is that people need a payment plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the package, and you offer a payment plan, you know, and then, of course, you have to get a contractual agreement on that.
Mm-hmm. And a credit card number.
Right.
And then you charge, and have it clear what you're going to do. If it's for 10 sessions and after six they decide not to come back, what do you do with those other four? Is the agreement say that you're going to charge only half for those, you know, but you are going to put it on the credit card? Or, you know, if you spell it all out ahead,
mm-hmm.
you can say whatever you want, if you have the ability to follow it through, just so you've made it clear to people that that's the choice. You know, that's what you're offering them.
Right. I just need to dive in and get the details down. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just decide what's going to work for you. I prefer not to work that way. People walk in with a check when they almost always, occasionally with the teenagers and the college kids, their parents mail the check to me. But
right, that's how I've always worked. But I'm finding that, you know, times are changing now.
yeah. Okay, sorry we weren't able to be of
thank
more
you.
Assistance with that. And it is a tough situation.
Thank you. I appreciate your input.
Wow, we've been talking about loads of topics today. We're about out of time. Does anybody have one maybe short one?
Hi, my name is Stephanie Hertel, and I'm from Plano, Texas.
Uh-huh.
And I was hearing there was some discussion about, you know, staying within the scope of practice. What do you think of this question? I met with a patient, and she really never came out and said she had some disordered eating issues. It is for weight management.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of times I heard some things about possibly some disordered eating in the past. She mentioned mm-hmm. that about sneaking food. And
mm-hmm.
she also mentioned the difficulty she has with her mom, and specifically asked, how can I tell my mom to sort of butt out of my nutrition
thing.
And so I really was very gentle with my response, trying to stay within the scope of practice. But I wanted your opinion. Has that ever happened to you? And if so, you know, what is your response, or what would be a good response to that question?
Tell me more about your concerns. It's Stephanie, is it?
Yes.
Your concern about where you'd be stepping over the boundary.
Exactly. It's like what is
your
okay mm-hmm. for us to do, and what should, and how do we say it, and who do we, because it is a very important issue to her, and it sounded to me like she's tried talking to her mom before, and it's just not working, and her mom is mm-hmm. very, sounds like she's very concerned about her health,
mm-hmm.
and but at the
right.
same time, maybe causing some harm, I don't know.
Yeah, so you're sort of wondering is if you get your, you know, jump in with both feet, you'd be ending up trying to do family therapy here.
Exactly.
That's sort
so
of
I,
what,
I,
yeah.
Yes,
exactly. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what I would do, and we'll see where it goes. Basically, I would take the kid at face value. I mean, I would just say, okay, I hear these are your goals, and these are the ones you and I can work on together. I'm hearing about how the stuff with your mom is making it difficult. How about you and I start on what you can do, just work on what we can do. And if you keep hearing that stuff come up,
mm-hmm.
then that's when you bring up the idea of a therapist, maybe even
okay.
a therapist, right? Because if you see that there are family therapy type issues that are indeed
mm-hmm.
interfering, whether it's a clear diagnosable eating disorder or not,
mm-hmm.
they still would benefit from someone who could do some things that you wouldn't be able to.
Right.
So I just blathered on. How's that sit with you?
Okay, and so basically just kind of reflect back what the concerns that you're hearing, make a clear distinction on what I can do as a dietitian, but then
mm-hmm.
also say if those things keep coming up,
mm-hmm.
then like maybe seeing a therapist, or do you see a therapist, or those some
mm-hmm.
kind of some things that I can say?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay.
Or might there be someone else you could talk with about this?
That's good. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a really good thought. Cause, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cause sometimes you just feel like when you're in session and everything's going great, and then all of a sudden they present you with a question that you feel
good.
Like, ooh, that's...
The monkey wrench gets thrown in. Yeah. Yeah. And these cases that might be disordered eating or almost an eating disorder, but it's not really clear. Those are tough.
Right.
And those are the ones where I find I sort of, you know, you just proceed ahead, you know,
mm-hmm.
in a straightforward, this is what she says she wants to work on, and, you know, and you go step by step. And then if, things keep coming up, then
right.
that's when you, you know, point it out.
Okay, very good.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We covered a whole lot of stuff today. This is great. Boy, I'm so glad you all called in. This was great. We had about 25 people and from all over the country, and I hope I'll see some of you at the Counseling Intensive someday. And for those of you who can't make it, remember I do have a podcast-based online program that gives credits called the Steps to Counseling Excellence, and you're welcome to go on my website and take a look at that and see if it would fit for you. And please do, I welcome email questions. I can't always, you know, answer questions in great detail on email. I can certainly point you to a tip that I may have written already about it, or maybe about a little bit. I'll help you as much as I can. Okay, and for those of you who are going to be in Atlanta at Fancy in October, do stop by my booth on the Sunday and say hello. Okay, good. Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Come on.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you, Molly.